Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Are you always better off when you're spouting off? I mean, you know, that is such a gross overgeneralization. It's not like you should always spout off. I know I spout off quite a lot. For example, I've been spouting off for the last 2 days on Talk Radio Local here on 600 KCOL podcasts coming up. Some local news, like in the northern Colorado, southern Wyoming area, but then some national stuff as well. So I welcome all listeners from all over the place. And that's the great thing about spouting off and about doing a live internet talk show. And it is live, at least right now it is. Now, if you're listening to it tomorrow, I'll be saying it's live, but it really isn't. So anyway, we do Spouting Off here live every single Tuesday at 2 o'clock Mountain, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time on the left coast. So you can always find it. And believe it or not, this is our 70th show of Spouting Off. And I hope to have a couple of cool things to share with you soon. In my 8 hours of talk radio that I've been doing, and it's amazing. It's like the more you do it, the more you love doing it. At least I do. I've been talking, at least on a national level, about my latest blog, which is at www.karencataline.com. Everything you want to know about me, much more than you care to, is over there at my website. And so I write op-eds, blog posts, whatever I can get away with. Excuse me, I think I've lost my cord there. Yes, I do. We're always trying to improve the sound quality here. And there you go. So hopefully it gets better and better and better. So the blog that I wrote initially was, they don't hate Donald Trump. And then my press lady, who I'm fortunate enough to have, she changed it to why they hate Donald Trump. And the truth is, I don't think they hate him. I know that's an outrageous thing to say. But in the blog, I pretty much tell you why that is. I changed it to why they hate Trump. But the real point is what I say in the piece, which has to do with the fact that the people that are always referred to as the haters, and that includes not only the unhinged, ridiculous left, but a good many of the people on the right that we always like to refer to as the deep state, well, they have been, particularly the left, have been trumping up hate for Trump for political purposes. And the sad thing is that people, everyday people who listen and who watch, even some conservative pundits, have bought this act. And this is really what I want to talk about. It isn't why they hate Trump, although I could wax philosophic about that forever. And I do, God knows. But it's that we have been lied to, bullied, and it proven that the left and their henchmen, or you can say the other way around, the media and their henchmen, the left, again and again and again, they have lied and completely perpetrated false stories for well over 2 years, and yet we still believe that they hate Trump. No, they've been trying to trump up hate towards Trump for a political end. And what is their political end? We never get there. We never find out what it is. I love disagreeing with Rush Limbaugh because it doesn't happen all that often. And Rush Limbaugh, I don't know, it was about a week to 10 days ago, whatever it was, he said, the reason they hate Trump so much is because of style and civility, or I'm sure he meant the lack thereof. I beg to differ. I don't think that's true at all. Because after all, at least on the right, remember George W. Bush's style, which wasn't certainly like Trump, but he had an embarrassing style. Republicans were constantly apologizing for George W. Bush and his Bushisms, his mangling of the English language. He wasn't exactly the brightest president we've ever had. I think he was maybe a little smarter than the left painted him, because they paint every Republican not only as a racist, a sexist, and a homophobe, but an imbecile and every other thing they can throw at him that they hope will stick. That right there should tell you that they ought to have no credibility. When someone is so over the top, you should immediately throw out the evidence and say, well, they're biased. But somehow with the media, we never do that. I don't know why that is. And I won't say we, because a lot of my listeners, a lot of people around, understand that this is political motivation. And I'm going to, by the way, talk about that with our guest when I get done spouting off. Dr. Martina Cartwright, listeners of this program will know that she's a dear friend, wrote the foreword to my book, Fat Lash, Food Police and the Fear of Thin. And she is fascinating for the simple reason that she is, well, for many reasons, she's a fascinating person, but she's especially fascinating because she's an academic. She is speaks and writes on mental health. She's female and she's not a liberal. Go figure. When we first met, we thought both of us were liberals, so we kind of kept ourselves to ourselves. This is quite a many years ago now. And she figured, well, you know, a Jewish female social worker, she has to be a liberal. And I said, well, an academic female who writes about sexual abuse, of course she's a liberal. Turns out neither of us were. And we've been great friends ever since. nonetheless, I still want to hash out this story here that I'm working on. And I disagree with buying into the notion that the left, the reason that they've lost their minds is simply that Trump is so horrible, or that they claim he's so horrible. His style, he's a blowhard, he's brassy, he's brash, he's uncivil. Well, that, I just don't buy that. That's nonsense. This is an opposition that has thrown everything in the book at this president, from, and I'm talking linguine on the wall, every which way that they can. First, they called him mentally ill. Then they called him corrupt. They're still calling him that. And of course, just like in the OJ trial, all of it is contradictory, but they don't care. Because if you buy one, then they've succeeded in making you think that he's the devil incarnate, right? Here's the thing. They were willing to perjure themselves, to engage in felonies, to frame a duly elected president just so they could remove him from office and either, you know, reverse the election, or simply he was that egregious to them. Now, honestly, I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, are we to believe that this is all because of their delicate sensibilities and they were offended by Trump's style and his lack of civility? Poppycock! This is poppycock. Do not believe it for 1 minute. Here's what I believe. I believe that the deep staters, and that's like a general term, you understand. I like to be precise, but sometimes when you're talking in big ideas, you have to make certain generalizations. So not everybody who doesn't like Trump is a deep stater, just for the record. But the deep staters who've been trumping up hate, the low information voters, which is a Rush Limbaugh term, excuse me, I apologize, who buy into this simplistic black and white thinking that Trump is evil and everybody else who criticizes him is good. Anybody who votes for Trump is a deplorable and is racist. All those radical and very black and white ideas. And by the way, that is not a racial statement, black and white thinking. It's a clinical term, like borderline personality disorder, thinking someone is all good or all bad. Now, once upon a time, I remember when liberals were lecturing us about that very thing. They were telling us that, well, you know, everybody is a combination and we could all be Mother Teresa and we could all be Charles Manson. Well, that's poppycock too, because not everybody acts on their evil thoughts. They learn how to keep them in check. They learn how to hold themselves accountable for their own behavior. That being said, here's my theory. See, I always come back. I go down all kinds of primrose paths, but eventually I get back to what I want to say. I firmly believe that the real true detestables who hate Donald Trump or who claim they do don't hate him at all. They hate what he stands for. If he were to abandon these policies, and I did write this in my blog, you can find it at my website, they wouldn't hate him nearly as much. They'd hate him because he's a Republican if they were Democrats, but they wouldn't be trying to destroy him, destroy his family, frame him for something he didn't do. They have lost their minds. And this is one of the great talents, forgive me if I've repeated myself, that Donald Trump is wonderful at. He makes them lose their minds simply because he lets you see who they really are, right? When he says things or does things that are so, he's got so much gumption and so much principle behind why he ran in the first place. Anybody who thinks that he ran because he really wanted to take this grief and aggravation doesn't understand Donald Trump. But he's brilliant at getting the public to see who they are. And this is who they were all the time. To expose it is very much positive for our side. I know you don't always see that until every 4 years, but it's very much a good thing for us to see who these people always were. They didn't just start acting crazy or believing crazy since Donald Trump. They've been doing it all along. They've been doing it all along. They've just been better at hiding it because they haven't had their hair on fire every everlasting day. But Trump puts their hair on fire, and here's why. Because if he were willing to abandon policies like these, then they wouldn't hate him so much. Here's what Donald Trump stands for, just, you know, off the top of my head that I wrote down in my blog. Government accountable to the people instead of people accountable to the government. This is a pretty basic one, but it's awfully important. And you know what? There are even Republicans who claim to be limited government and who believe the people ought to be accountable to the government. Why? Because human beings love power. I don't care who they are. If you give people enough power, they will want more, kind of like Lay's potato chips. Okay, so government is accountable to the people instead of people accountable to the government. Well, Donald Trump doesn't have anything these deep staters really have to give them, so he can't be bought. I mean, he's already been living nicer than the White House, and you didn't need this aggravation, and I firmly believe that from the very, very beginning. But I go on. He's willing and ready and able to expose lies, corruption, and crony capitalism. Don't forget, it's the crony capitalism as well, because it's people on both sides of the aisle been getting rich off the backs of the people. Now, that's not a socialist view. That is, hey, if you're for personal responsibility and limited government, you don't want to see crony capitalism either. You don't want corporations to get rich off the people by sweetheart deals with the government. That's why I'm usually always against those public-private partnerships. Oh my God, so many peas I'm popping. Public-private partnerships, which basically is a way for both of these powerful entities to make deals with one another. And we're in the age of that. It's a real problem. Here's another one. Allegiance to American borders and American sovereignty rather than to globalism. Frankly, if I were going to name these in order, that would be number one. It's the globalists against the everyday people. It isn't even really Democrats against Republicans. I'm not the first person to say this, but certainly we've never seen it as clearer than it is now. The Bushes are globalists. McCain was. Mitt Romney, who loathes Donald Trump. For what reason? Because he isn't always nice? Well, guess what? Mitt Romney isn't nice at all. This reputation that he had of being so nice is poppycock. He's an evil man. He's a nasty, nasty man who will go after anybody in his way and then pull his punches when it comes to going after Democrats, because he probably agrees with them more than not. And that's being kind. The adherence to the Constitution and the rule of law, which includes enforcement of our immigration laws. Has anybody watched how both sides of the aisle have vested interests in keeping the borders open? I mean, I actually intended to talk about Trump's giant win on the border. Maybe I'll get to talk about it with Martina. But the Democrats are beside themselves because he keeps succeeding and succeeding and succeeding. And Nancy Pelosi doesn't know what to do about it. I mean, she can't stand him and she can't figure out a way to take him down, because everything she's tried, everything the Democrats have tried, simply isn't working. I mean, and you'd think that they would have learned by now that they ought not to underestimate Donald Trump. Here's a man, never ran for office in his life. He bested the Bush machine. He bested the Clinton machine. He's taken Obama's history and his so-called legacy, which is a nightmare, down, and trying to return this country to some accountability to the people. That's a fairly big goal for a country this large. And he's working on it. He's doing it. Unapologetic love for our country. Now, why should that anger them so much? He's unapologetic about his love for our country, the military, our first responders, people that keep everyday people safe, who can't afford armed guards in front of their mansions. I mean, the contrast has never been more obvious. And it's always like that. The more and closer you get to socialism, the more drastic is the difference between rich and poor. The exact opposite of what Democrats say they believe. And that's the key to understanding. Every time they accuse everyone else and point the finger, that's what is the result of their policies. Now, some of them have it intentionally and some don't. But whenever a Democrat says that they believe we need to get rid of income inequality, their policies create more and more of that exactly. And they always fancy they're going to be the ones to be on the rich side. And what they don't understand is almost always they become poor as well. They just think they're going to be the ones to be rich. And that's sort of the lie of socialism. There are a couple people at the top, kind of like a network marketing scheme. But all in all, you have to force, you have to tyrannize people to do what you want eventually. Because guess what? People are like my terriers. They don't always agree with you. They don't always want to do what you want them to do. And they're going to fight back. Either you do it with force or you don't do it. That's why free markets and freedom always work to help America thrive, and tyranny never does eventually. It does do an awful lot of damage, though. And finally, at least on my list, and believe me, it is not a complete list, a complete, and I could do an hour on this, a complete disregard for identity politics, and in its place, a regular demonstration of his respect for merit and individual achievement. I can't emphasize this enough. The Democrats have nothing but identity politics. That's all they've got. They can see racism in a ham sandwich. It's insane. I've never seen anything like it. They make everything about race, sex, gender, because they must make victims. And I've talked about this ad infinitum, so I'm not going to talk about it more here. But suffice to say, Donald Trump doesn't pontificate about the fact that he doesn't believe in identity politics. I believe he mentioned it once during the campaign. He shows it every day by showing his respect for merit. That's his policy regarding immigration. That's his policy. He's not afraid, certainly, to fire people because he had to depend on some very shady characters because he didn't know a dang thing about government. Thank God. There are times I don't want to know anything about government either. He came from the private sector. He came from the very place that conservatives say they believe so much in. And then a good many conservatives like, that guy whose name always escapes me because I can't. John Kasich. Now, there's a piece of work for you. There's a guy who claims to be a Republican, and yet he's about as much Republican as I am, tall and blonde. Not happening. John Kasich is no Republican. He might be have an R after his name, but he's no conservative, not at all. So that's my supposition today, is that they don't really hate Donald Trump. They hate what Donald Trump stands for. And what Donald Trump stands for is America and Americans. And that right there is the biggest crisis of all, that we have people in this country who actively, overtly, and even admit that they do not stand for the country that they are citizens of. Get your brain around that one, huh? They don't stand for our country. Even the, you know, and I heard this today, so I'm lifting it a little bit. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is constantly taking the side of our enemies. They take the side of China, the side of Mexico, whomever, because they're globalists. They want a global economy. They have no allegiance to this country. And this country is the one that guarantees your freedom, that gives you the Bill of Rights, which they're trying to chip away at bit by bit by bit. So that's what's on my mind today. I wanted to get into Nancy Pelosi a little tiny bit, and maybe we'll get into that with my friend Martina. I just have to tell you this. It's so funny. So I admit I still have AOL, and I probably will for the forever, only because they're the only ones that I can send a group email. Now, if I say that on the air, they'll probably stop it tomorrow. But I still have an address list that I like, even though I've put it somewhere else. And sometimes AOL just fits better. I don't know why people hate it, and it's probably putting cookies where the cookies don't shine. But so I get to see the leftist line every day on AOL. And this one was great. It says, Pelosi draws a line in the sand on Donald Trump. What's her line in the sand? I'm done with him. Pelosi on Trump insults. I'm done with him, she says. I'm done talking about Donald Trump and responding to his attacks. You know, this was hilarious. Here's what I think is going on, because never, ever, ever see it at face value. They never say anything publicly that hasn't either been poll tested or strategized. Thank you, George W. Bush. Strategized, right? Now, their strategies might lose, and they do often with Donald Trump, but they always have a strategy for what they say. I've been watching poor Nancy Pelosi try desperately to get her caucus, her radical, young, leftist, racist, bigoted, real, I'm talking real, Jew-hating bigotry in her caucus to stop talking about impeachment, because she knows she's a political animal. She knows it's a loser. So first she said, you know, he's just not worth impeaching, which was hilarious. Then she said, let's see, what else did she say? She said, that's what he wants for us to impeach him, so let's not do it. She acts like a five-year-old. Have you ever seen that? It's like when five-year-olds say, don't do it, he's not worth it. Or she talks to her caucus like a five-year-old. Nonetheless, there was no there. She's not drawing any line in the sand. She's just saying more for her caucus. I think she also said she wants to see him in jail after his term in office is up, which is also preposterous and hilarious, and I can't think of any more adjectives. If he's such an evil criminal, why does she want to impose that criminality on the country? Why? Because she's imposing her own criminality on the country, and Donald Trump is trying to expose her for that. I rest my case, at least for now. Let's get Martina Cartwright on the line. And Doug, my lovely esteemed producer, is going to give her a call. We have about, I don't know, we're going to take about another 10 minutes before our commercial break. And I'm going to tell you about our guest while he's getting Dr. Martina on the line. Dr. Martina Cartwright, along with having written the foreword to my book in 2012, Fat Lash, Food Police, and the Fear of Thin, she has quite a resume. She's internationally known scientist and speaker. She has a PhD and is president and CEO of Beacon Science Biomedical Consulting, an adjunct faculty member in the University of Arizona. She has more than 20 years experience in biomedical research, so we're going to talk to her about some of that fascinating stuff, threats that we're dealing with, including an education in infectious diseases, bioterrorism, food safety, nutrition, and neuroscience. I could go on, but I won't have any time to talk to her. Oh, yeah, and www.martinacartwright.com. She has filled in for me on several occasions. Welcome to Spouting Off, Dr. Cartwright. Are you
today.
There?
I'm there here.
There she is. I love that. You know, you say hello and all of a sudden, bingo, she's right there. How are you doing this gorgeous day?
I am doing quite well. We've got a lot to talk about today,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, we do. I asked you, so, Martina, and I'm sure people don't mind, you don't mind if people call you Dr. Martina, Dr. M, whatever, whatever works,
they
right?
They call me much worse, so.
Hey, you know, if you're a conservative, they always call you much worse, and, you know, you should wear that as a badge of courage. When I was talking to you about what's been on your mind lately, and there's always a lot because I'm telling you, for a person who's a bio researcher and everything else, you stay on top of politics. Yes, you do. And you told me one of the first things that you can inform our audience about is about this terrible typhus that's going on in Los Angeles. Now, thank God you don't live in California. I don't know if I could talk to you. Forgive me. That was just a joke. Just a joke. But there are some very serious infectious diseases going on in Los Angeles hitting our police force. Tell us about that.
Well, there's been one reported case of typhoid fever or typhus in an LAPD officer who was apparently patrolling some of the areas downtown where there's quite a bit of homelessness and squalor. I mean, these literally look like open pits of trash. And people are using the streets of LA as well as the streets of San Francisco as their own personal toilets. As disgusting as that sounds, these types of diseases are relatively rare in the United States. If you go to the Centers for Disease Control, CDC.org, and look at some of the statistics, both typhoid fever and bubonic plague are relatively rare in the United States. So this really perked up some interest in infectious diseases when this LAPD officer showed signs of typhoid fever, which it's a bacteria. And it's spread by unsanitary conditions. So, in fact, the CDC recommends that if you're traveling to a third world country, or if you're going to Pakistan, for example, or South Asian countries, you should get vaccinated against typhoid fever. So, typically, it's contaminated drinking water, contaminated food, or exposure to open sewage.
I don't mean to make a joke, but I'm going to. Does that mean if you're intending on going to Los Angeles, you have to get a vaccination?
You know, this is what I would say, is that if you're going to L.A. and you're spending quite a bit of time downtown, or you're in a high-risk profession, just as those of us who work in hospitals have to get vaccinations
yes.
for hepatitis,
uh-huh.
it would probably be a good idea. And just to be aware, because the other thing that's is also coming up as bubonic plague. And that's also a bacteria, but it's carried mostly by infections that are associated with rodents, and they certainly have a rat problem there. And I'm not speaking about the politicians.
Well, let me ask you, as a layman person with a little bit of fear in my voice, is bubonic plague spread through the air, or do you have to touch someone to get it, or what?
It's typically spread through encountering rodents that have the infection. So fleas, infected fleas from small animals, things like that. So it could be dog, cat, rats, things like that. So if oftentimes, I do live in Arizona, so I shouldn't say oftentimes, but in the northern part of the state, we usually get one or two cases every year from somebody who's out hiking, and they get bitten by an infected flea, and they end up with bubonic plague. So it's relatively uncommon, but it's common in areas where there is just overbreeding of rats.
Well, apparently then it is not spread from person to person. It's not catching from one person to another?
Typically,
otherwise, there would be an epidemic of bubonic plague, wouldn't there?
Right. It's typically the result of exposure, I would say, to for a layman, for body fluids from a plague-infected animal. Uh-huh. So it's typically, let's say, for example, that you have individuals that are out there cleaning up rodents, you know, dead rodents in these homeless areas. If they get exposed to some of those fluids from the rodent, then yes, they could become infected, but typically not from person to person.
Dr. Martina, you know, we're going to take a break in just a little bit, but I figure before we leave this extra pleasant subject of rodents, diseases, communicable diseases, and typhus, so we can talk about the demo rats, as some people call them, or politicians who are sometimes behaving like rodents. Can you tell us, just a few weeks ago, Ebola was back in the news, and I meant to ask you about that as well. Should the everyday person be concerned about Ebola, and tell us about how that is spread?
Not at all, not with Ebola. It's typically isolated to certain areas of Africa, and it's spread by contamination with bodily fluids, so not airborne, not person to person like a cold, for example. Mm-hmm. Once it's contracted, it's extremely deadly if therapy is not given as soon as possible, because it causes the person to literally bleed out. So they die from loss of blood, and that's what happens in the sense of Ebola. So it's contagious if people are contacting bodily fluids, and over in certain African countries, that's not uncommon. That's why it's typically clustered. So I wouldn't be too concerned about Ebola. We see outbreaks like this just about every year around the same time. I would be more concerned about a rodent infestation in Los Angeles or San Francisco or even Seattle and some of these places that are, pardon the pun, plagued by a rodent problem that carries disease. You know, just being extra wary in the summertime when the heat index goes up, the trash starts to rot, and rotting trash attracts rodents. I know all this is very pleasant, but people just need to be aware.
Well, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
It is.
If people haven't seen the film Seattle is Dying, which I have referenced in some of my op-eds, they should see it. And I'm a big believer in shining some light on ugliness. It's the only way, either ugliness of hatred or unfairness or injustice or actual dirt and, you know, trash. I want to talk about this from your perspective. I know some of what I think, and we tend to agree quite a bit. But I know what I think, and I want you to ask to talk after our break about what you think are the motivations for suddenly a left that used to lecture us about littering. And now literally I saw a meme, which was funny but sad, that said that dogs have to sidestep human poop in Seattle. It's horrible and it's heartbreaking for such a beautiful city. They're trying to do it to all the cities in this great country, including Denver, Colorado. So can you stay with us?
Absolutely.
Great. Dr. Martina Cartwright is joining us here on Spouting Off. We'll let her do some spouting off about that and a whole lot more after this break. Stay with us.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N. And Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. Now we're back. Karen Cataline coming back with you. And I got to hear that commercial break, so thank you. Doug, we are talking to Dr. Martina Cartwright, friend, forward writer, and writer all around. She has some great stuff. Do you still write for Psychology Today, Martina?
You know, a little bit. I haven't done so lately, but I'm going to get back into that. I wrote a piece probably about a year or so ago about freedom. And about the importance of the individual instead of the collective. And that received some very interesting comments.
When you say interesting, do you want to share with the class what you mean by interesting?
Well, I would say interesting from the perspective of there are many people that feel that the collective is much more important than the individual. And I think we're starting to see that in politics. And socialism rearing its ugly head again. And the way that I explain that is that if anybody has ever done a group class project, there's always the doers and there's always the slackers. Mm-hmm. And socialism is no different. So you have to take care of yourself because, you know, really, that's the only person that's looking out for you.
Well, and just as a little bit of an aside on this subject, because you've hit, of course, one of my favorite subjects, especially now, the siren song of socialism, lots of alliteration there, is always that we know best. There is an abject good, and we know it all. We can take away every care and every problem you have. Just trust us. And the funny thing is, nobody falls, very few people fall for that when it's a Nigerian businessman who wants to offer you $10 million and he doesn't even know you. But somehow when a politician tells you that I'm going to take care of you cradle to grave and all you got to do, and if you don't, well, we have to do it for the common good. Well, but you don't have to do it for the common good, but I do. It's a lie. It's a pure lie for power. And unfortunately, people listen to it when it's coming out of their television, but they don't always listen to it. They don't listen to it. That's actually one of the things I was going to talk about. And so we'll have to save Seattle for another minute. When we in our own lives find that we don't trust somebody because they've lied and lied and lied and lied to us, we stop listening to them, or at least we stop putting stock in what they say. And it's funny to me that even conservative pundits often, even though they know the press lies, and yes, maybe there's a couple threads of truth, but a lot of times they're still allowing themselves to be persuaded by the narrative, this honey covered narrative. What do you think about that? I mean, why is it, do you think, that people do that when in their own lives they'd have common sense and they'd say, well, you know, don't give all that money to my brother-in-law. He's just going to waste it like he did every other time. Let's not do it again.
I think it's a couple of things. I think it's, hope and belief that, you know, you can be disappointed in a person, but it's altogether different when you're disappointed in a group. You know, it's kind of like if you belong to an organization of any sort and somebody at the top has been stealing money, let's say. You don't lose your faith in the organization necessarily, but you lose your faith in that person. Where you start to get into a lot of trouble is when most of the organization, it has been dishonest. And I would say that about the media for the most part, is that it used to be one or two individuals. You remember back in the day when people would do the news, you know, and they wouldn't give their opinion. It would just be, here's the facts and no editorial comments.
Yeah, well, they did have a bias, but they at least took heart to cover it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like Cronkite was a liberal, was a Democrat, but he thought it was important to kind of, you know, conceal that. Nowadays, people don't conceal that at all.
No, and so what you're getting is more opinion rather than anything else. And I think people get, bought into this because they are interested in the idea of belief, that they really want to believe in the institution that they grew up with, or that there's hope that, well, maybe they're being honest this time. I find it very curious, to your point, that they don't learn their lesson. I mean, if you have a dishonest spouse or a dishonest, you know, friend, you're probably not going to be married to that person or be their friend anymore. But it seems to be different with the media, and I've personally shut it off. I really don't watch too much news unless I absolutely, you know, want to be informed about something. I've got CNN
and then
on parental block in my house.
Right, and then you double-check the facts while you're at it.
Yeah,
you know, to go even a little deeper, since you and I both love psychology so much, I think it's a level of fear that you don't want to believe that these institutions that you depended on are as corrupt as they really are, including things like the CIA and the FBI, that they've been running a scam. Now, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but at this point, if you don't see that the media has tacitly tried to cover up the misdoings, the misdeeds of people trying to frame Trump for something he clearly did not do, and yet we all know it, we're all winking at each other going, yeah, we know, but we know the media won't report it. That's astounding to me. And I think it's because people really want to believe what they're told just because it jars their foundation.
It does. And it's hard to believe that the CIA, the FBI, the IRS, and some of these big organizations, and not the rank and file, but I'm talking about the upper echelon.
That's right.
Literally, we're weaponized against people that either support Trump, support conservative ideas. I mean, look at what the IRS did to the Tea Party.
Yes.
When Obama was in charge. So it's these types of things. And again, not to be conspiratorial, but it's a matter of looking at patterns and patterns of behavior.
Correct.
And
exactly.
Opening your eyes and seeing all this. And I think the other thing is that we as individuals who see the pattern feel somewhat helpless against it. It's like this big machine, and you think, well, how am I going to fight that? And you see what Trump has to go through every day. I mean, like him or hate him as far as personality goes. I
love his personality.
I do, too. I mean, he's very blunt.
I love it.
And
I just love it.
A lot of people the wrong way. They said, well, I just wish he would shut up. And I said, I don't. Because he tells it like it is. You know where he's coming from, and you know he's right, and people just, you know, initially are stunned, and
it's
then
like
the truth comes
Titanic.
Out.
It's like the Titanic sinking. The ship is ready to break in two, and you're ready to die, and someone says, can't you be a little more polite? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't fit for me.
Well, and it's this globalist agenda that I think has been planned for some time, and that, you know, Trump is the monkey wrench here. He's the guy that disrupted the machinery. He's the guy that disrupted everything. And the reason why he's there is because people like us supported him, got him in there, because we wanted a disruptor. We're not interested in this globalist agenda. At least I'm not interested
right. And
in this globalist agenda.
Did we ever vote for that globalist agenda? Do you ever recall a vote where any politician, Republican or Democrat, particularly Republicans, said, you know what, like, did George W. Bush, in fact, all the Bushes, ever say, you know what, I want to get rid of American sovereignty. I want to open the southern border so that we can be a multinational country. Forget about our borders, our language. We're just going to get together and have one world government. Do you think people would have voted for George W. Bush if he had said that? I don't think so. I don't think so. So in a couple of minutes back, and here's the thing. It sounds like I'm a broken record on some of these things because I can always talk about Trump. The reason it's important is because the left will not give it up. If they would have given it up and if they would have sucked it up and been a grown-up about the fact that they lost an election, then we wouldn't be talking about this right now. The interesting thing is, and this is the part I hope that I got across in my monologue, is that the reason they hate Trump and have tried to destroy him is because he's doing exactly what they feared he'd do, which is to expose all of their misdeeds. If anybody thinks that what we are seeing is the end, it's the tip of the iceberg. This is how business has been getting done in Washington for decades. And here comes an outsider who can't be bought, who is committed to opening it all up, declassifying all the secrets and saying, here, American people, here's what your government has been doing while you thought they were on your side.
And look at what's happening is that they couldn't beat him at the ballot box. So they're trying to create more dependency. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with this homeless problem that's exploded since Trump has been in office. And it has nothing to do with him and everything to do with the Democrats driving this culture of dependency, telling everybody it's okay. I mean, we saw the deterioration of San Francisco some years ago, and Nancy Pelosi lives in her house high on the hill while all of this is going on in the city. It spread to L.A., here in Phoenix, where I live, up in Seattle, you mentioned Denver, where you are, it's everywhere, and it's not normal, and it's not okay, and they're trying to say, oh, it's the bad economy, Trump drove these people out. It has nothing to do with that, and everything to do with these are Democrat-run cities for the most part. The mayors are Democrats, and then you see what happens.
Well, and you took the conversation exactly where I hoped you would, which is all the way back, you know, back to where we began, which is the destruction of all the major gorgeous cities in this country, including Seattle, San Francisco, with the same policies. I've had the last op-ed I wrote, because as you know, I took the month of May off, and the op-ed still holds and it's still accurate, which is they're trying to impose socialism one state at a time with the same policies. Things like legalizing hard drugs, things like decriminalizing defecating and urinating on the street, so that the left continually elevates and apologizes for criminal behavior, for sloth. I mean, I don't know what the seven deadly sins are, but the Democrats love them all. Meanwhile, they want to accuse law-abiding citizens who do hold themselves accountable as the bad guys. So what we're looking at is a complete upside down, inside out of everything that has made America great. And you got one guy and the people that sent him to Washington to fight it all. It's astounding times that we're living in, is all I can say at this point.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the regression, really. That's what this is. It's not progression, it's regression. In the sense that, think about what's happened to our cities. We now have, and my mother is 93 and my father's 88, and they remember when streetcars were all the rage back in the, you know, 30s, 40s, and 50s. They got rid of those because people got automobiles. It was a more efficient way to travel. Now we're going back to public transportation. You've got scooters. They want to do solar power. They want to, you know, you're talking about trash in the streets, homelessness, all of these things that were commonplace in America at the turn of the previous century. In other words, you know, we're going back to the times of 1900 here.
That's because they believe America, at least the hangers-on, the bandwagon people, believe that America doesn't deserve its prosperity. It came by it dishonestly. Those are the hangers-on who believe that America doesn't deserve all its prosperity. And so because they have been taught to hate this country with such a passion, they're happy when America does bad. Now, the dirty little secret is there's a much, much smaller group of socialists, ideological socialists slash communists slash Marxists, who know that the things that they're trying to impose are the roads to socialism. Get rid of the Bill of Rights, get rid of masculinity, get rid of the right to self-defense, start treating people like subjects instead of citizens. On and on it goes if they can reverse everything America stands for. I just never thought that I'd see it in my lifetime, and I'm kind of glad my father isn't here to see it, because it would break his heart to see that we have so many avowed socialists in this country. We only have a few minutes. Your thoughts. I'll give you the last word here.
I would say that is very true, and it's very disappointing, and I'm hoping that there will be a sea change where people recognize the evils of socialism. You can't make it better. It's human nature. People behave the way they behave, and if you want an example of socialistic failure, look no further than Venezuela.
Well, of course. And they just, you know, they always have an answer, which is, well, I just haven't been in charge.
Right.
I haven't been the benevolent dictator, and so that's why it failed. But these people are children. They act like children, they think like children, and they haven't grown up yet. I am generally optimistic in the sense that, number one, just as Gandhi said in the movie, I don't know if he really said it, he said, tyrants, murderers, they always fail. They do a lot of damage, but they always, always fail. And shining a light on it, getting people to be honest about what they always thought all along, we have people who are now saying, yes, we want to take your guns. We have people saying, yes, I'm a socialist. We have people saying, yes, I believe in wealth redistribution, whereas they were much more dangerous when they were lying about it. Our previous president was really good at lying about it, and now people have taken what he believes to the next level. They want to be honest about it, and that's a good thing.
It is. That sense of exposure will create what we have right now, which is a very divisive country. But oftentimes,
yeah,
when people will ask me things, I'll say, first of all, I'm an American. then I'm a woman, and then I'm a scientist. I mean, if you're going to categorize people, I'm an American first, and just because of your gender doesn't mean that you should get into a position of power. And I'm also a capitalist, and a proud capitalist at that. So to annoy a liberal more than to say I'm a capitalist and I'm American first.
Well, that is just so jingoistic, Martina. How can you do that? You know, I love you. I do. I love you. How can people get a hold of you? Make contact with you? You're not doing Facebook anymore, are you?
I'm not doing Facebook anymore, but they can always email me at martina@martinacartwright.com. I'm always happy to receive email. And, you know, these topics are close to my heart because right after 9/11, we did a lot of bioterrorism preparation. And now it seems our own cities are doing us in from an infectious disease standpoint. So one thing I will say is that it's going to hit them in the pocketbook. Several medical conventions have canceled in San Francisco due to the conditions and the very aggressive urban campers. We can't say homeless people, urban campers. So
let's call them homeless. Actually, they're not all homeless. They're people who choose to camp out so they don't have to pay rent and they don't have to work. So they are urban campers. They tried to pass that in Denver, too. Martina, you are a delight. I'm always happy to have you fill in for me. We'll have you back because you're just mucho fun to talk to, plus you're a dear friend. Thanks for joining us, and Godspeed, and stay safe out there, okay?
Thanks a lot, Karen. You too.
Okay. Well, that's about all the time we have on this edition of Spouting Off. Join me at www.karencataline.com, Facebook / Karen Cataline, and, of course, Twitter @ Karen Cataline, if that's not redundant. Thanks to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio, and to HW, my husband, the guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.